You are listening to the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation, a national nonprofit founded on the belief that every pregnancy deserves a happy ending. Learn more at starlegacyfoundation.org. Our guest for this episode is Dr. Yasuko Yamamura. Dr. Yamamura received her medical degree in 2001 and went on to complete her residency in obstetrics and gynecology at the Mayo Clinic, as well as a fellowship in maternal-fetal medicine from the University of Minnesota. Dr. Yamamura has vast experience helping patients with high-risk pregnancies. Well, Dr. Yamamura, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Chris, for having me. I'm happy to be here.
My first question for you is why you chose high-risk pregnancies as your focus area. Out of all the focus areas within your field, it seems like you've kind of naturally gravitated down this path. Why did you make that choice?
Well, when I was going through my OBGYN training, while I certainly appreciated all aspects related to caring for women throughout various stages of their life, I always found myself on labor and delivery. I just always wanted to see what was going on down there or be involved with more the obstetric side of things rather than the gynecologic side of things. And it really was a focus on maternal-fetal medicine, where we see a very broad range of patients, a broad range of outcomes as well, that really piqued my interest. And I think the thing that really keeps me interested in this field is caring for patients sometimes through difficult circumstances, but feeling like I can help them in those cases really brings me a lot of job satisfaction.
That's great. Let's alter the conversation and shift to IHCP, which I know is an area of expertise for you. First off, I would imagine a lot of our listeners don't know what IHCP is. So can you define it for us?
Absolutely. So IHCP, which is intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy, is a liver condition that's unique to pregnancy. And it's characterized by intense itching or pruritus is the most common symptom that women complain of. And with this condition, it's there is a dysfunction in the liver where bile that's normally produced in the liver isn't able to be transported into the biliary tract, and so it remains within the liver cells and then eventually is released into the bloodstream. And so in these women, if you were to check their blood levels of bile acids, they would be abnormally elevated. Because it's unique to pregnancy, it usually does resolve or go away after delivery. Of the pregnancy-specific liver diseases, this is probably the most common that we see.
Exactly how common is it, and is there a certain sector of the population that is more susceptible to IHCP?
So in the U.S., the general population prevalence is probably about 0.5%, but there certainly are subsets of populations, particularly our Hispanic patients, that have a higher rate of IHCP complicating their pregnancies. There's also many other factors that can influence the prevalence of this condition, and that can include things like temporal influences. It's more common in the winter. Geographic influences. It seems to be more common on the West Coast and in the southern part of the U.S. And certainly ethnicity can have an impact, as can family history or genetic predisposition to the condition.
Women who have IHCP are known to have a higher rate of poor pregnancy outcomes, including stillbirth. Do we know why that is?
So the hard part is we don't know exactly why these adverse outcomes happen in pregnancies complicated by IHCP. There have been a number of theories that have been postulated, and one is that based on the fact that we know that bile acids, elevated bile acids, seem to be the underlying association with the disease and the poor obstetric outcome. We also know that bile acids are transported across the placenta So we presume that bile acids can have a negative effect on the baby. One method that has been postulated is that the bile acids themselves can be cardiotoxic, meaning that they can induce fetal heart rate abnormalities and maybe even fetal arrhythmias or irregularities in the baby's heart rate. We know that bile acids may also increase the expression of oxytocin receptors in the uterus. Oxytocin is actually what causes labor contractions or stimulates contractions, so that may also be associated with the risk for early birth. Bile acids may also induce vasospasm, which is constriction of the blood vessels within the placenta, which may decrease blood flow to the baby while still in utero.
You work in a field, pregnancy, that is supposed to be a joyful experience, and is for most and many people. But the things we're talking about right now are risks, and they may be remote, stillbirth, IHCP, whatever it may be, but they still are risks. And in your job as working with patients, what is the balance in cultivating the joy and the hope, but also making sure that women and families are educated about some of these risks? Have you been able to master that balance in your career yet?
So that is a hard balance, in the sense that we don't ever want to discuss these risks in the context of a pregnancy to scare that patient. Certainly educating the patient and helping the family understand why we may be making recommendations like medications in pregnancy or additional ultrasound monitoring or even the need for an early delivery. By explaining the risks, usually that's also how we explain what interventions will be utilized to mitigate some of those risks. But always keeping the focus on the reason that we're doing this is to optimize pregnancy outcomes, with our most sincere hope being that we have a positive outcome in the end.
Getting back to IHCP, if a woman is pregnant, how would she know if she has IHCP, first of all? When should she be concerned that she might?
So one of the most common symptoms of IHCP is itching, and it can be a very intense type of itching of the skin in funny areas. So areas like the palms of the hand, the soles of the feet, so areas where you don't typically experience itching. Usually if you examine the patient, you won't see any evidence of a rash. Other than sometimes you might see excoriations or scratch marks because of the itching. But the way that we would diagnose this condition would be to do a blood test. And with that blood test, you can test for the level of bile acids, so fasting bile acids, but also the level of liver transaminases, which can also be elevated in cases of IHCP.
Are there any studies going on, or is there a need for more studies to kind of uncover the mysteries associated with IHCP that you referenced earlier?
So there are many ongoing studies to try and identify what the risks are, because I don't think we can ever treat one condition the same way in every single patient. We always have to individualize based on what this patient has experienced, what her unique circumstances are, how things look with her baby. Family history may also play a role, her symptoms, her response to treatment. And so we're trying to always hone in on how do we take this kind of general information of knowing what the risks are, what the interventions available are, and then try them to hone in and then tailor them specifically for that patient. So the latest research that we have regarding IHCP is in relation to the actual level of bile acids and how a higher level of the fasting bile acids confers a higher risk for adverse pregnancy outcome, including stillbirth. So what we now know is that women who have very high levels, so more than 100 in their bile acids, probably need even more or need even earlier delivery than we would typically recommend.
How early are we talking?
So generally, we recommend delivery between 36 and 37 weeks for pregnancies that are complicated by IHCP. But if we see that at any point in the pregnancy, the bile acids are very elevated, so more than 100, these are cases where we're recommending shifting that delivery time frame to between 35 and 36 weeks.
How new is this, these new recommendations you're talking about the early delivery? Is this a fairly new thing in your field, or has this been something that's been widely known and understood across the country for a while?
So this is a new development. So this paper was published in The Lancet early in 2019. So it probably has not been widespread adopted into clinical practice just yet. But in our group, we really try and stay up to date on the most current literature and are continually changing our practice guidelines based on new information.
Once a woman has been diagnosed with IHCP, what treatment options are available? How can she reduce the risk of a poor outcome?
So currently, the most common treatment that's being utilized is ursodiol, and this is a medication to reduce the serum level of bile acids. And this treatment has been shown to be effective in relieving some of the maternal symptoms, so the itching, and sometimes the itching can be significant enough that these patients can't even sleep at night, or they're waking up multiple times during the evening, which that in and of itself, over time, can become harmful. But as far as reducing some of the risks of adverse pregnancy outcome, we don't have enough information yet that would say that interventions like ursodiol will actually improve fetal outcomes, but we know that they can improve maternal symptoms associated with IHCP.
If a woman has IHCP, will she get it for all of her pregnancies? And if so, what precautions should be taken in subsequent pregnancies?
Conditions like IHCP do have a fairly significant recurrence rate, so they've been reported to happen in the next pregnancy about 60 to 70% of the time. The hard part with that, though, is that while we can counsel our patient that, yes, this can happen again, there really are no interventions or preventative strategies that can reduce that chance of it occurring again. Certainly, if that patient has underlying liver disease as a risk factor for the development of IHCP, maybe controlling or treating their underlying liver disease may impact their recurrence risk. But if they have a genetic predisposition to IHCP, that's something that we can't change as far as their risk for the next pregnancy.
I have a two-part question, and I think I know what your answer to the first part is, and that is, do you think there's sufficient awareness about IHCP? And I'm guessing probably not, because a lot of this information is new. The second part of the question is, how could that be improved? I know I Googled IHCP before I came over here to interview you, and there isn't a ton out there. So what can we expect to see happen just to get this information out there? And what, in your opinion, should be done to make sure that the right people know about it?
So I think amongst obstetric providers, there certainly is knowledge of IHCP. There's always new information coming out about medical conditions in pregnancy, including IHCP. So I think education is always going to be the best way to spread the word and to disseminate new information. And that can be through attending regional meetings or staying up to date on the literature. Also, obstetric providers many times will access our national college, American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, who will issue practice updates whenever there's new information.
Final question for you, and this is just because you've worked here since 2008, you mentioned, and I'm just curious if you have noticed any changes in how people respond to pregnancy loss over your career, in terms of the stigma, how families react, best practices for doctors and nurses in dealing with these situations with patients, just anything anecdotal you have seen in terms of changes over the course of your career, or if it's pretty much the same.
I don't think it's the same. I think as time goes on, things that I have noticed are definitely a trend to try to destigmatize pregnancy loss, being able to openly discuss babies that are born still unexpectedly. And have these conversations openly with family without fear of, certainly they are tough memories, but still being able to talk about it and maybe even to use that information to advance what we know about stillbirth research. So I think as time goes on, especially as people become more open to discussing it, we will certainly be able to know more about this field.
Well, Dr. Yamamura, thank you for taking time to speak with me. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
That's all for this episode of the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation. I'm Chris Duffy. Thanks for listening.